Kevin's garage.
Yeah, I mean, we don't need to dwell on that. I think the bigger item at hand is, or at least an interesting fact, a lot of the local Austin festivals have been getting washed out, and that unfortunately happened to what used to be called Psych Fest.
It's now Levitation.
Never more levitating than when you unfortunately can't put it on because you can't.
Well, a bunch
get
of
stuff
big day bands came in town and had nowhere to play.
Well, and a lot of them
found places.
Yeah, well, yeah. That usually resolves itself because everybody works in the background and they end up playing club gigs, yeah, which is cool. Like, those are actually pretty fun. That happened with a festival when I was in Fort Worth, but
it was
supposed
to be
kind
an
of
outdoor festival, and they were predicting like catastrophic rain. And yeah, it didn't happen.
It didn't happen. That's the word. I mean, if it had, well, in the, you know, it may have been called out, you know, it might have been out of their control. Like, I know that, like, if there's threats of lightning, like when they called off, part of ACL last year, the Austin Parks. I mean, the rain did show up there, but I know like there was a lot of lightning. And ultimately, that's the Austin Parks department.
Well, rain but did eventually show up, but it was at like 4 a.m.
But everybody camps out there.
Sure. And two quick points. One, the weather that did come through at 4 a.m. was a mofo. Like,
no,
it was
bad.
like minor hurricane.
I happened
wind.
To be awake when it went down. It was hardcore.
I was not, and then I was when the lightning hit, and it knocked out about half a tree next door. Like, literally.
Did your dog freak out?
Jesus, I didn't know it was that bad. I was asleep, and it woke me up, but I didn't realize like how it was that bad.
No, it was
bad.
Like raining sideways.
The other, yeah, it was spooky. But anyway, the other thing that I thought was kind of interesting was just like some of the celebrity, like the rock and roll guy, like touring band commentary that was happening on Twitter. And I just saw like a retweet from Anton Newcomb of Brian Jonestown Massacre. Yeah, who was talking about like, he's like, well, he just gave a laundry list. He's like, oh, I'm really bummed. Like, there was a laundry list of the bands that he really wanted to see. And then somebody, you know, inevitably it's Twitter. So like, and it, like 10 people reply, oh, well, you should come to this show that's happening at this night with my chitty band or whatever. And he was like, I don't drink. Like, this is what I thought was really interesting. He was like, I don't drink.
Oh, is that guy sober now?
Yeah, I think so. Like, or he would be dead.
Probably good for good him.
Thing. Yeah, yeah, no, exactly.
That's a good thing.
Yeah, but anyway, he was like, I don't drink. Somebody's going to want to take a selfie with me. Like, that was his other thing. And he was like, and it's just like, it sounded to me like he was doing the math in his head about like, hassle quotient versus like how fun it would be to see one of the bands he wanted in a place that was not a festival. So anyway, it's too bad, but hopefully they'll come at it strong next year.
All right, well, let's have our own little festival.
Okay, that sounds
good. Oh, and then Mark, you had something. There was a who's it?
Let's get to that on the other side. I think we'll save that.
Okay, save it
for more fun.
Save that shit.
I'm Mark.
Ryan.
Kevin.
Shane, this somebody likes it.
Sometimes I feel like we're in a hurry with the seasons. Like, you ready for summer? It's like barely spring.
Are you ever ready for summer here?
Oh, dude, I'm so ready. Yeah.
No, I'm saying in this city, like,
I can be like an ant under a magnifying glass and like prefer that
for 9 months. That's pretty much what it is.
I don't know. We're
about 2 weeks into summer, and then we're like praying for.
Yeah, it's pretty. It's pretty bad.
I'm way more happy with hot weather than I am.
Sure, I am too. But it gets so long, and there wasn't. You know, this winter was great because it was
mild.
It was warm. There was no winter.
Well, and don't get me wrong. Like, discussing the weather makes for a scintillating podcast.
Yes,
but,
that is true.
But the reason that I bring it up is, Mark turned us on to a new single that
this up and coming band.
Yes, you
just
yes.
dropped this
like
week.
They're trying to break through.
Yeah, one of them is clearly actually broken on through to the other side. But,
is that Davy Jones?
I don't know. Maybe.
No.
Which
yeah,
one?
Yeah,
it
is.
No,
we're speaking of we're speaking of the Monkees.
Yeah.
Yes.
No. Yes. Davy Jones died a few years ago. suddenly.
Anyway.
And apparently, they have a new single that just dropped.
So, really, the best thing you can do for your production as a band is, like, don't exist anymore, and then just keep putting out work.
Well, and also, it's by a band that quit putting out work themselves 25 years ago.
Yeah.
You know, like, Andy Partridge of XTC fame apparently wrote this song. Mark, you know more about this than we do.
It's catchy.
I know about a hair more than you do, actually, just that it dropped this week. Andy Partridge wrote the song, and if we hadn't told you that it was the Monkees and you listened to it,
it just sounds like XTC.
You would have thought it was an XTC song. I mean, it's just a little trifle of a song, but it was quite nice. I mean,
that's exactly the way to encapsulate it.
It was quite nice.
I just kept thinking
it was pleasant.
Whatever the the thing we always come back to, the Leslie Nielsen 1960s movie SNL thing.
Which you can never find anywhere.
By the way, I'm terrified of gorillas, so please don't dress like one.
Yes, that was exactly it. So yeah, so the key is like you play that and then don't dress like a gorilla.
Yeah,
I don't know. Yeah. Anyway,
the Monkees will forever.
I have no idea where you're going with that, but I love it. Yeah. Let's print that.
He's drawing a line between the Monkees and madcap 60s
comedy
zany
movies.
And an obscure SNL sketch.
Sure. I did notice one thing. Mark just played this. It was on YouTube. I'm pointing at the computer and it's no longer on it, but I noticed that there were only 24,000 views as of now. It says official audio video. So I don't know. Like,
it's really the most
recent
view that's most important.
What, the one that we participated in?
Yes, yeah. Yes, exactly.
Like a minute ago?
Yeah, exactly. But no, we all sat around and looked at the screen and then listened to it. We were like, oh, yeah, that's clearly an XTC
song.
That's
an XTC song, Sung by Mickey Dolenz,
And the funny thing is like, I have these two like kind of conflicting ideas. One is like of the zany madcap Monkees goofball comedy stuff.
Pushing a bed down the beach or something.
Exactly, something.
Except they're all like in their 70s now.
Pushing their walker.
Dragging a casket behind
them. One of them's gone.
Their walker down the beach. But yeah, there's that. And then there's like the idea of Andy Partridge like singing a lot of this behind a curtain somewhere because he has stage fright.
Yeah, that's true.
He has severe stage
fright.
Pay
no attention to the man behind the curtain.
Exactly.
Well,
anyway.
I mean, wait, and who was clamoring in this? And Michael Nesmith
is like, I can't wait for a new Monkees single.
No, but in the band, who was like, let's do this and let's get with Andy Partridge. He needs to write this song. There had to have been some like fortuitous meeting somewhere.
Like they were just grilling out back at some point.
Grilling.
Like, hey, maybe we should do this. Like,
somebody's.
What the hell?
Yeah. Well, they did.
We'll have to look and see who
is
involved.
Entirely
in
too much time
discussing the
new oddball Monkees
single.
Well, this week we're throwing a curveball, right? Like,
it's true.
It's to quote Simon Pegg. Well, I like it.
Yeah, or somebody likes it. Hey, especially this guy.
Yeah. We're doing another round of that. It's been a while. And, you know, I was thinking
For the uninitiated, do you want to cover what that is again?
Okay, so, yes, for the uninitiated. So, normally on the show, we pick a record, an album that, you know, it's just the basic conceit that we can't be that familiar with.
We don't know that well.
Yeah. In this round of, so every week I pick one, Ryan picks one, Kevin picks one. This week starts, I guess what? I like it. It's an album that we do know well, or at least one of us knows well.
I don't know it as well as you do, but I had heard it all the way through multiple times.
I have heard it all the way through multiple times. Well, anyway, I picked The Smiths by the band The Smiths. And I was thinking about this earlier. I was like, I don't know how interesting I can. I'm so familiar with this band. I'm a big fan of this band. But and this album,
to know you is to know that.
That's true. This album, I think, is their most consistent. There are better songs on other albums, but this is the only album, excepting maybe Louder Than Bombs, which is the singles collection, that doesn't have a clunker on the whole record. And that's...
I disagree.
Okay, well, that's what this is about.
Sure.
So,
sure.
I mean, they're not as good as... They're not anywhere near as good of songs as there are on...
The Queen is Dead.
The Queen is Dead, but, I mean...
I think the one thing that we can probably all agree on is there was a note in one of the pieces that I read about this record that said, interesting thing about the Smiths is they came into the public consciousness already full-formed as
fully
a band.
Formed, yeah.
Yeah.
There's a lot of consistency with the writing. It does get better. Like as they go forward... from the next record, Meet Is Murder, the songs are getting even more interesting, less navel-gazing, thematically branching out, much more so on The Queen Is Dead. But then you'd have,
well,
like...
To me, there are two genius songs on this record, a couple of, like, really great songs, and the rest, there's some kind of flyover stuff. It sounds foundational. And I'm coming at this, like, knowing the rest of their catalog probably better than I know this record. It sounds foundational for, like, what they were going to do, but some of it's like just Morrissey's just being tedious.
Well, and I feel like
what? How?
Yeah.
When?
Lyrically, there's some self-indulgent stuff. Musically, I think that every song on this is great, and I like, and there's so many. Sorry to interrupt you, Mark.
No,
there's,
that's fine.
When you say foundational or flyover, I think that it's one of the things that kind of makes this album just a consistent listen, you know, like nobody had ever heard anything like this before, and I think that overall, all in all, it's just a very consistent album. Like I said, the high points are a lot higher on the other albums, but I feel like this
well,
is
and
a
this
very
isn't
consistent
the first
record.
Smiths record I knew. Like I knew some of their other stuff before I ever got around to listening to this, and I'm sure had I heard this first, I might have a different opinion. I'm sure I might, but you know, some of the songs are just kind of meh. Now that said. Like, there's stuff on here that I think is just ridiculously good. I don't know. It's probably hard for you to have perspective.
No, like I said, it's easy for me to see, like The Hand That Rocks the Cradle. Like, I like that song quite a bit, but then it goes on and it goes on. I mean, to me, it sets a mood, and I think that this is one of the only albums that they have where you just have some... I mean, other excepting, again, Louder Than Bombs, you have, like, some songs that really just, rather than just kill you with, like, it's hard to like put into words. I wasn't gonna say melody because God knows the guy is not a very melodic singer. The catchiness, there's some songs that just set a mood, and I appreciate that.
Well, and like it does seem to me that like the people that I knew when I was a kid or an adolescent that were really into the Smiths, like I can definitely understand like where they got it, because he comes off as like a hyper-literate, very intelligent, gay teenager on this record. Like,
can I also say, too, like, and this is clearly just my own issue, but I do think, like, it takes me a little while, and, it, like, I feel this way about Morrissey's solo work as well as some of the work by the Smiths. Like, even if I ended up being captivated by it, I spend the first few seconds, like, with my contact with this artist, all thinking about Dana Gould's impression of Morrissey.
I don't know if I've heard that.
Oh, holy shit. It's not amazing, but it is. But it's in terms of the temperature and the way that he delivers it, it's all about, like, you know, I cried and then I lied and then I cried, then I lied down. Like, essentially, like, it is the way that it is very indicative the way that Morrissey meanders lyrically and intentionally that
he,
way.
He's like and very morose, but yeah. Cleverly morose.
I sure. See, and there's this album. Perhaps there's definitely it's more morose than the rest of their catalog. There are songs, but a lot of the stuff where people mistake him being morose, he's parodying, like Heaven, like a song that Heaven Knows I'm Miserable Now, again on Louder Than Bombs.
No, he's being Morrissey funny on that. I get that.
It's the whole thing is a joke. Like, he's in on that joke. Don't get me wrong. I mean, I've been the first person to. I mean, the guy is a fucking crazy person. But he's also genius.
He's also brilliant. No, I'm with you on that.
There's no one that had ever done anything like this before. I mean, in any capacity, you know, like.
And he clearly has a singular voice. Like, and I'm not talking about his actual voice. I'm talking about the persona that he brings.
No, no, like, that's the, you know, a cliche to say they broke the mold. Like, for
they,
sure.
They broke the fucking mold. But, I mean, we've talked about this on the show before. Then he goes on. I mean, the guy insufferable in a lot of ways, but you know, at the same time,
he's the most singularly at the same time intriguing and irritating, like all at once.
Yeah, no, I see. Why don't we listen to one of these songs?
Well, it's your call. So, what do you think?
Well, we'll start with what I think is the best song on the record, and that's "This Charming Man." I read something from Johnny Marr years ago, and he was talking about when he did "How Soon Is Now," he had it in his mind that he wanted to create this song that he was saying that if you go into a bar and you hear like the first like riff of beginning of "Layla" by Derek and the Dominoes, everybody in that bar knows what that song is, you know, just that beginning part. And that's what he wanted to do with "How Soon Is Now." And it's true. He won. Everybody.
For sure.
But I kind of think he'd already done that with this song. Like,
absolutely.
With that beginning line.
The second it starts,
like, it's so distinctive.
You're just like, yes.
Yeah, and you know what it is. And even people that don't know the Smiths know this song, like, is everything that they do. The best.
He's just like a Mr. like jangle pop. But
well,
like,
you get that, but then you really get that jaunty bass line that Andy Rourke is playing,
right.
And then also
I don't remember how like all the legal stuff like ended up, but like the bass is amazing on that song.
The whole band is the legal stuff wasn't about the songwriting ever. The songwriting was always going to be split 50-50, Morrissey and Marr. But what those lawsuits were about were the performance. And, you know, if you're a band, what Morrissey's argument was, he's like, they were session musicians.
Anybody could have done that. And I'm like,
But it didn't matter.
They're kind of being a dick.
They were on every band photo that was ever taken. They were there. If you go inside their albums, it says,
yeah, they were
Smiths,
in all they played all the shows.
The Smiths is, you know, these four people. It was just again.
Maybe we should just redefine what a band is, Morrissey.
Like, yeah, well, that's what he tried to do, and yeah. then remember we were talking about this. Like he's like sleep with one eye open, or basically, or something like that.
It was like Andy Rourke and Mike Joyce.
Yeah, Andy Rourke and Mike Joyce.
Yeah, the other two.
I
guess don't matter.
Well, yes, and this is probably a good time, and maybe Shane, maybe you can, or Ryan, you might know more about this than me too. That wouldn't be so much, but the impression that I've always kind of carried around is that Morrissey was the big ego here, and he was really, like, in terms of the breakup of the band, the reason that they'll, like, there's been a lot, they've been offered millions and millions of dollars to get back together, even for, like, a song or two.
He can't be bothered.
It's that way now, but at the time, Johnny Marr is the one that broke up the band.
Well, right, and I read that, too, and so, yeah, it was, like, can you speak to that a little bit? Like,
I think that, I mean, like, and there was some intense pressure on them. I mean, it's you think like every album that they only put out four proper albums, and every one that they ever put out,
but they put out a bunch of singles.
That's true. They put out a bunch of singles, and a lot of those tried it. And part of the reason, okay, this is a very Morrissey thing. If you anybody get a chance to look at the album cover, it's their artwork looks like nothing
totally
else.
Morrissey.
It's totally nothing had ever been like that before, and it was consistent over the course of their catalog, and all their singles look like that too. But Morrissey and Marr had this, they wanted to put out, and at the time this had completely pretty much died out, but they wanted to put out 7-inch singles. Singles are a bigger culture in the UK anyway, but were really into putting out, like, they wanted to put out little records, and a lot of these little records, like, not individually, you know, not like each record or whatever, but the songs charted. A lot of those songs charted. There's a lot of pressure on them, and also
they were on Rough Trade, right?
They were, and then they jumped to EMI for the last Strange Ways Here We Come. It was like Strange.
But Rough Trade didn't like have a ton of money to just put out singles all the time and hope that they worked.
Well, they did. Rough Trade did fine through these guys. Like, they didn't want them.
But it's still a gamble. Like, every time you do it, it's a little gamble.
Yeah, but they didn't want them to go to a major, and they had graduated to
a
major.
A 7-inch gamble.
At least in.
Yes, thank you.
What'd you say?
7-inch gamble.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
No, what I actually like, and you may, I'm sure you know more about this than I do. So Morrissey was just like kind of a gadfly dude about town, and Johnny Marr just showed up at his door once and was like, hey, you want to. He was. Okay, so Morrissey was president of the New York Dolls fan club. Manchester.
Of course he was.
And Johnny Marr is just like, hey, you want to sing in my band?
Well, I think like Morrissey had been in. Should have gotten Munoz to do this show with us. I'm a fan.
He's the scholar.
I'm a fan. He's the scholar. That's a great way to put
it. And he's talking about Matt Munoz, who has been on the show before, who is the booker of the Cactus Cafe here in Austin. Yeah. Anyway, go ahead. Sorry, Shane.
Oh, no. I'm just, you know, at the time, you got to think about this. Like, Morrissey was this bizarre, sexually repressed guy, but he was also 25 years old, and Johnny Marr was 19, barely 19.
Right? Yeah.
Yeah, when you know, so there's a big difference, you know, between 19 and 25.
Sure.
And just shows up and asks this dude, and they like
just immediately it, just became this amazing band.
It basically crazy. It never wasn't like they weren't in you know, they were consistently good throughout their whole career. So on this record, there's definitely some songs, getting back to your point a little bit earlier, there are definitely songs that are better than the other ones.
There's some down-tempo stuff.
It's the down-tempo. I get what you're saying. I think some of those, like, and I like those songs, but again, they set a mood for me. The writing isn't as sharp, but it's still pretty sharp compared to a lot of what people are doing.
Most other bands,
So, and you kind of touched a little bit on this earlier, and talking about syncing, you know, the way they sync together and stuff. I felt like there were a few songs on here, and maybe the same songs that you're talking about, where it really was Johnny Marr and the two session musicians playing great music. And Morrissey's kind of almost doing a weird beat poet type
like
thing
performance
on top
art.
Of
it. Yeah,
and
totally.
The Rocks the Cradle is that way, and that's the one I was saying later. Like, by the halfway through it, I'm like, there's no melody. It's just, the music's cool. It's just doing this. Yeah, well, that's what would happen. I mean, they would write the music, and then Morrissey would take the music and go away and write his stuff to it and then come back and then just sing it, and they hadn't heard it yet. They wouldn't rehearse it all out, the four
of
them.
I just realized, like, you know, listening to this week, and it's probably been, I don't know, 15 years since I've listened to this record all the way through, but I mostly, in the past, have just skipped those songs and gone to the ones I like.
Sure.
And there are several, but, you know, there's some stuff that I'm just like, eh.
I think it's it's like, for me, like, there are better songs than other ones, but it's just a consistent record. It's just nice. It's a nice rainy day record to put on.
That's exactly what I was going to say. It needs to be raining for me to listen to those songs.
So I'm going to share a quick snippet from the Pitchfork take on this, which I think is kind of interesting on a variety of fronts, but we'll just stick mostly with the facts. He said, released in early 1984 after a couple of singles and rapturous British press, had built up buzz around the band. The Smiths is a terrific record and also a slightly frustrating one. It's not quite the Smiths as we know them. And so this is somebody like sort of digesting this from the perspective of knowing their entire catalog.
And that's pretty much what we were just saying.
Yeah, and that's kind of the way I was looking at it.
But anyway, but then he goes on to say, starting with the debut album with a slow 6-minute song that hints at working out memories of child abuse through painful sex in Reel Around the Fountain, was a particularly audacious move, uncut by overdubbed lounged act keyboards, played by Paul Carrick, the guy who sung Squeeze's song Tempted.
Tempted.
Yeah. Anyway, which that was a little nugget that I did not know. But anyway, yeah. I think kind of what my takeaway from that is, like, even all the like sort of pseudo funny stuff in there, really good musicians who go on to fame oftentimes seek each other out when they're sort of in the early going. That success is not always an accident.
That song, I love that song, Reel Around the Fountain. That, I think, I kind of, the you know what?
And that's one I like, too.
And that's one of the ones
it's not one of the two genius tracks, but I think it's pretty great.
It's one of the ones where his lyrics really are less self-indulgent. They really, like, they're very, very clever. And he has, like, a little funny moments where he's like, you know, I dreamt about you last night and I fell out of bed twice. Just like, you know, and then when he goes,
people see no worth in you, but I do.
Right.
Like, I just get that. Like, you know,
it's just a well-written song. Or when he's like, but then he goes back to his self-deprecating. He's like, he always has this like self-deprecating, but also he inflated sense of self-worth that like comes through with someone. When he goes like, you're the bee's knees, but so am I. Like, and there's this stuff in there it's just a good song.
Well, let's be honest. Bees have a few knees. So, I mean, you could both be in the knees.
Yeah, that's a shockingly pragmatic way of looking at it,
yeah.
Kevin.
And
entomology.
Also, sadly, literal.
Entomology, like, right? Yeah. Or is it? No, etymology is
etymology
words.
Etymology is words, and entomology is insects.
You got to put that in there. Yeah. You got to put that in there.
Goddamn right, man.
Hey, why don't we listen to this? Reel Around the Fountain.
Reel Around the Fountain?
Yeah, let's do it.
It's time to tell the tale of how you took a child.
Ryan was just acting like a 3-year-old right before Mark.
Dude, belches are always funny.
And appropriate coming off a poignant Smith song.
That is a poignant song. I love the way that's... It's just a great way to... It's an incredibly ballsy way to start that album out because they could have started it with... you know,
This Charming Man,
Hand in Glove.
Well, you don't.
What difference does it make? Like, there's a lot, but they started off with this 7-minute long
language.
That's part
meditation
of it.
I think on you know, doomed relationship or whatever.
Well, the point being is like you can't start an album that way if you're not self assured in who your band is.
They were like, this is what we're doing.
Yeah.
Settle in, everybody. Right the hell off.
They danced to the beat of their own fucking drummer their entire career, and it worked out okay for them.
I don't know why I just made Morrissey sound like Barry Corbin, but still. Like.
So can you speak a little bit to the history of this album and how it was originally recorded?
Okay.
They laid down 14
tracks.
Was this
a Stephen Street?
No. They originally recorded. I feel like some of you guys keep asking me questions. That's sort of like
well,
almost
you're
like.
You're the adult in the room
it's
about
like I'm
the Smiths.
It's like I'm in a press conference.
Well, no. It's like we're on a museum tour.
So Troy Tate originally recorded that he was the first producer that they picked. By the way, like those tapes have never been released, and Johnny Marr is all for releasing them, but he's not the only person involved. I just found all that out. So Troy Tate...
But Steve doesn't want to.
Yeah. Steve doesn't want to do anything connected with the Smiths, except he does do Smith songs in concert now. I've heard him play a few, which is pretty...
Do they sound like the Smiths?
Like the Smiths. Yeah. Great. It's pretty great like to walk...
Well, and his keyboardist lives here in town.
Yeah.
And I've met him.
If it's still
he's
the same band,
super nice guy.
I didn't realize that Johnny Marr but lived in Portland for the past 5 years.
Well, what band did he join?
Modest Mouse
for a little while.
Oh,
he was there. Oh, he was with
them. Oh,
Modest is about right.
I like a few of their songs.
Sure.
Wow, yeah. That's different. Well, okay, well, that's a whole other discussion.
Yeah.
So they did this album with Troy Tate, and then they re-recorded it with John Pointer. I think it sounds good. I think the drums sound really thin on this record, but a lot of people, like a lot of otherwise fans of these songs, like critic fans of these songs and of the Smiths in general, it gets criticized for how thin it sounds. But I think it really suits itself to the way the guitar, it makes the guitar sound chimier. on this than in the rest of, and you can really hear the bass
chimey
stuff.
Like that's a good way to yeah put like his guitar tone.
Right, but you hear that less and less as they go on. But in the bass, the bass is pretty assertive on this, but it becomes more assertive on their other records. But
was he playing on a Telecaster, Johnny Marr?
Dude, he was playing on like hundreds of guitars. Dude used to fucking like record a basic part and then go back in and with other guitars, and he would also like utilize alternate tunings a lot that had like dulcimer sounds and shit, and he would like go back in and just record another part.
Recording with one of his myriad other projects that have come along since the Smiths, he like told whoever his collaborator was like, "Oh, that sounds too Johnny Marr," and they're like, "You are Johnny Marr." Like,
yeah, if anybody can get away with it.
But he went through it for a while, and you can understand why. I mean, if you're known for something and you want to move on and move on to like,
I guess, he did that Johnny Marr thing really well.
Yeah, he did. But you know who else does their thing really well? It's not my favorite, and nowhere near my favorite band is The Edge. And like,
I was thinking about that too.
And like, I'm kind of over it. 40 years into it,
well,
you know?
I love 80s U2.
Yeah, but I'm saying I love 80s Smiths. I love 80s Johnny Marr, but you're right, he does it well, but you want to, like, I think one would want to, especially when you've left.
Evolve.
Yeah, evolve, right.
Well, and you got
it. I mean, you get bored as an artist.
Sure, and you got to figure at some point, it's like, when he did it the first time, it's like, nobody'd heard it before done that way, and they were like, oh, that sounds like a signature, and then after a while, if it's like the only, they're like, play the hits, then you're like, well, mofo, I might
definitely
try something different.
Yeah, it definitely changed, but you know, and then again, it was not the best of breakups, you know. So you could think, oh, fuck that, I'm gonna do something different, you know.
You know, breaking up's hard to do, but should we get to the?
I've heard that before.
Should we get to the middle?
Yeah, why don't you play some intermission music?
It's festive, I'll tell you that. The 80s, there's a lot of festivity going on in the 80s. People, you know, the funny thing is like they have 80s nights, and you know, generally speaking, they're festive. You know what else the 80s are full of? Anyone?
AIDS and zeros. Know, greed is good.
No.
Yeah, I was thinking like
I'll simplify.
I don't remember the
shoulder
80s.
Pad.
I was well, coked out at Studio 64 through most
yeah
of the 80s.
Also,
so
none of you are wrong. I think maybe Studio 64.
No. I think
that was also the 70s.
No, in the 70s it was 54. In the 80s okay it was 64.
Oh, thank you
both
very
you
much,
thank,
Shane.
I got your back on
good
this, Mark.
Good God Almighty.
Well, the fact
I may have been coked out, but I know where I was.
The fact checking. Anyway, what I was going to say is John Hughes movies, and
I enjoyed those.
And I thought
during
like
the 80s,
I thought given
as well,
given the fact that we have been enjoying some Smiths tonight, I thought let's take a trip in the Wayback Machine and listen to something a little bit different. And I chose
from a John Hughes movie?
Could be. I chose.
That's not an answer.
I
think that's on purpose.
I chose Tenderness from General Public. That's what I'm talking about. So here's the thing. That song, like, so I always think of that song as a movie outro, and the reason is because it's been used twice as a movie outro.
Which movies?
Well, that's the thing. It's so, and I just sort of assumed that it was John Hughes movies, but turns out it was Weird Science and Clueless. So,
Weird Science was John Hughes.
Here's part of the Wikipedia entry. It says, the song's lyrics tell about a man who needs tenderness to feel like a man. It was one of the band's first singles. I'm adding for effect. The single cover of the extended version.
I don't know what effect you're adding for.
It's like a nasally guy with a cold.
He sounds like he's like should be kind of some kind of sports.
Yeah. Single cover, the extended version has a sentence reading: "Words like conviction can turn into a sentence." So it's a double entendre. Anyway, other interesting things. So I actually pulled this from, you know, it doesn't come up very often. But Ryan bought me a gigantic book of songs for Christmas before last, maybe?
A gigantic book about songs.
Yes. Yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, there's a lot of... It's solely about music.
You don't open it up. Yeah.
You don't open it up and it plays and the song comes out.
No, that's true. Yeah, it's not that. But anyway, so this is... I'm going to read a little snippet from... for this. The book is 1001 Songs That You Should Know Hear Before You Die or something like that. So anyway...
or something like that. Yeah.
Yeah. Or something.
Especially when it's sitting right in your lap.
Well, I'm not going to. I'm not going to go that kind of effort to turn it over. So, so it says, after ska revivalist The Beat, known as the English Beat in North America, broke up in 1983, guitarist Andy Cox and bassist David Steele launched Fine Young Cannibals. Meanwhile, vocalist Dave Wakeling and Toastmaster? Ranking Roger started General Public. The former experienced greater success, but the latter two had their moment in the sun. And that song was their moment in the sun. And this was
that makes sense, because I was like, I always got the English Beat and General Public confused.
Because they were
conjoined. Like Wilco and what's the other
Sunvolt?
One?
Uncle Sunvolt.
They're just like Wilco and Sunvolt.
It's an Uncle Tupelo thing.
Very similar sounding.
Yeah, yes, big time.
Exactly. But anyway, the other reason that I chose this song was that they had, I mean, clearly not the same level of success as the band that we're covering tonight, but they had an inverse experience. They were, this song in particular, charted and did really well in the U.S. and Canada and did not do very well in Great Britain, where they're from, whereas the Smiths initially experienced the opposite phenomenon.
And apparently Shane had never heard this song.
No, it rings no bells.
That is fascinating.
I love this song.
I'm
like,
quite
it's
familiar
okay.
with the song, and I have to, and I'll probably get it from you guys for this, but I always thought this was David Bowie.
Oh, no.
It was around the time of Let's Dance, and it's not that far off stylistically.
Huh. Yeah. I could see that, having never heard the song before. I could somewhat see that.
Well, and you know, the question
but
that
also
they
asked, lesser David
you're
Bowie.
Way the fuck wrong.
Exactly.
So the question that they asked throughout that song is like, tenderness, where is it? And the question is, or the answer is, it's right there. It's right there, fellas.
There
you keep talking about it.
Well,
and
you just keep dancing with each other.
Yeah, exactly.
You're going to find it.
Oh, my God. Is that video 80s
I used to
balls?
Dance like that.
Look, yeah.
It's 80s as balls. Thank you, Kevin.
Yes, that's the shirt you should make, Kevin.
Exactly.
I thought that the video was a lot more entertaining than the song. The chorus is decent. The verse just goes on and on and on and on with nothing like... You know, I don't know, but the creepy ass like
creepy
the first 20 or 30 seconds of the video, it's just like all these like shots of like smiling, grinning
children. Like,
their heads, close ups of their faces, and they'll morph into one another. And
I don't know why they're there.
Well, and then and it ends that way as well.
Well, it is the tenderness.
Yeah.
That's right.
So it's tenderness, and then they immediately cut to two guys dancing with each
cavorting.
Other in moonlight.
Yeah. And then there was a neon electronic guy dancing with them at various parts.
Yes.
Well, anyway,
Kevin,
I wanted to share
that. Yeah.
Oh, I'm glad you did share. Now I could. If somebody asked me, if I'd ever heard "Tenderness" by General Republic, I can say I have in fact. Now heard it.
You'd be like, do you know their relationship?
And that comes up in most job interviews.
yes.
So I can nail that now. Yeah, I'm gonna fucking ace that shit, dude.
Stick that landing.
All right. Well, all right. Should we get back to the Smiths?
I reckon.
Let's do it.
Let's do it.
I mean.
Let's do this.
Smiths.
Smiths. The Smiths.
The Smiths.
a lighthearted romp through the English countryside.
lighthearted.
It is quite lighthearted.
A romp.
he said romp. Well, I mean, so we never really got to. I think I've been able to discern, Kevin, how your feelings on this album are. But I mean, do you feel like a lot of people are able to say, well, you know, if I could separate the band from the singer, I would like this band.
No,
more.
It's not really even that. I mean, and that's fair, totally fair assessment to make. But like for me, that's not where I net out. Like,
well, are you a Smiths fan, Kevin? Like,
yeah.
I don't know.
Oh, sure.
Oh, I didn't think you were. I got the impression you didn't like them at all.
No, that's not true. That's not true. I feel like post Smiths, and certainly like within the past 5-6 years, like a lot of what. This is my net, and sadly, I won't be including any of the session musicians in this assessment. But it's like basically my take on Morrissey is he's a very talented, mostly pompous jackass who cancels tour dates. Like that's what I get of Morrissey.
It's a reasonable assessment.
Yeah,
you're not that far off.
Yeah, and then of Johnny Marr, he is a super collaborative, very talented guy who wants to continue to break new ground, but the patterns that he's worn are his own, and so he ends up sort of either falling into those or finding things that he can do that are probably not as groundbreaking as he wishes to be.
Okay, but here's an interesting thing.
What are the bands he's been in since the Smiths? The Electronic, Modest Mouse.
It's Susie and the Banshees. He did some touring with them. And then he's had, and was it Johnny Marr and the Heaters? He just put out his own solo album.
Yeah, as I recall, I've heard him sing and like, eh.
The solo album that he put out was pretty good. He's a fine singer. But the songs themselves and the melodies are what's going on in those songs are, at least instrumentation wise, are pretty good. But here's something that should be said about this, is that like people tend to not have anything bad to say about the guy. Like, he's apparently a very generous, and you know, somebody out there can correct me on this, but from what I've heard, like that interview that I just said that I read in the AV Club recently, I mean, he just sat there and indulged every question this guy asked without complaining or anything, and apparently he doesn't say bad things about people, and he's apparently just a pretty straight up stand up guy. He's pretty much the exact opposite of Morrissey.
Which is all the reason more that it struck me as a weird outlier that and maybe it shouldn't, but that Marr was the one who said, we're not doing this anymore. This is done. Like,
yeah, there's a whole like,
and I don't know that.
Yeah, that we don't have time to get anywhere near time to get into. But I think it's really interesting. I think Morrissey's a genius in his own right, in his own way.
He's a frustrating genius.
He's a frustrating genius simply because, you know, he's done things that like nobody. He's a very singular person in a lot of ways. Johnny Marr is just a straight up musical genius, like no matter what. But in discounts, and again, we were talking about this earlier about the other two, the session musician Andy Rourke and Mike Joyce, they're amazing players. Especially Andy Rourke. I mean, he's one of the, that guy should have gone on to be one of the more famous, he's the most underrated bass player I've ever heard.
So many of their songs, the bass is really featured prominently.
It's what you know.
And it wouldn't be the same without him.
No, and he's an amazing player. He writes incredibly cool parts, and for some reason the guy did. He's a fucking DJ now, dude. That's what he does. Like he's a traveling DJ. Yeah. No,
he went the Norman Cook route.
Norman Cook was what, in the House Martins.
Yes,
is that right?
Yes. But then he got pretty famous on making his own music. Like on, you know, now he's gone back to being a DJ.
Fatboy Slim was.
Yeah, Fatboy Slim. Yeah. But I mean, like Andy Rourke, like plays like clubs like Elysium when he comes over here and stuff like that, and spins music for that. He doesn't play like big EDM festivals like Norman Cook does. And the fact of the matter is, he's fucking Andy Rourke, man. It's crazy. He's an amazing. Well, he had a heroin habit. There was some of that in there somewhere.
Oh, that's a bummer.
Well, a lot of people have had heroin habits and gone on to have, like, you know,
productive lives.
I think he kicked a while back, you know, and stuff like that. But I mean, he's Andy fucking Rourke. It's crazy to me that he doesn't, you know, anybody he's not a household name because of various reasons. Partially because he never went on and played with other people and did amazing things as much of a genius bass player as he is.
Can I circle back for just a second to Marr And I think one of the things, it didn't occur to me until right now, but one of the reasons I think that I have the impression of him that I do is that I got a chance to see on DVD the first Seven Worlds Collide collaboration that...
was that Neil Finn?
Yep, that he put together in New Zealand, and they sort of, you know, brought in the rhythm section from Radiohead and Eddie Vedder and various and sundry other accomplished performers, and they filmed the shit out of it with super high-end equipment, and it's beautiful. Like, it's just gorgeous. And Johnny Marr was there, and what I remember was that they did some of his tracks, but it was, like, really, like, he was on stage quite a bit, and he just seamlessly complimented whoever he was playing with and whatever they were doing. And I was like, that kind of told me a little bit of the fact that, like, that guy's such a signature sound. But he didn't have to.
He's a team player. That's what I was saying about how nice of a guy
he is. He wants the project to be better.
Right.
And doesn't want to be, like, the star of the show.
Right. Yeah.
Which in the Smiths, like, obviously, it's just Morrissey because he's just ridiculous. Just,
if you go back and watch some of their, like, top of the Pops things where he's just, like, undulating with gladioli,
frumping around
with his
hair was out of the back, his back pocket.
He's got this hair. He's like, he's maybe like 55 pounds, and he's got this hair that's got to be like weighing almost as much pompadour of the rest of his body. And with a hearing aid, that was his big thing for a while. He'd wear a hearing. He didn't need to wear a hearing aid, but just.
But why not?
He's an odd dude, but it's really endearing when you're 15 years old and you're reading these lyrics.
Well, they seem geared towards, like, disaffected teenagers.
Well, he was kind of that way. I'm sure that a lot of these lyrics have been sitting around since he was
that
age.
Oh,
yeah.
Other thing that this reminds me of, sorry, this will hopefully be the last of it, but, like, the other thing this reminds me of is, we've talked about this before, maybe it was during the Susie and the Banshees set, but, like, that... The thing that the piece that Chuck Klosterman wrote about Goth Day at Disneyland, like, lots of Smiths talk around, and they're not really, I wouldn't consider them a goth band, but it was like there were like,
no,
there's
but
lots
they're,
of
they're,
crossover.
But they're first cousins with
they
the
are
goth
yeah
scene.
Yeah, like the Morose thing.
If you like this, you're probably gonna
probably
like
gonna
that.
Like this. Yeah.
But again, a lot of the moroseness is mistaken. I think a lot of it is. I mean, don't get me wrong. Like. There's definitely like a
much of this record, I think, is earnestly morose, and there's a lot of winking moroseness or morosity. What is it?
I don't
morosity.
Yeah,
sure.
Morosity. But later on in their catalog, a lot of it is kind of a wink kind of thing.
Well, they call him the Mazer,
the Maserati. Well, it'll drive really fast, but it's super sad all the way.
Yeah, I'm going with Steve.
Yeah, Steve. I'm sure he loves that stuff.
Yeah.
All right. Is it? Should we play another one?
Yeah. Let's do. So, what is your favorite?
There are two Genius songs, and you played one of them already, which was "This Charming Man." But my favorite song on the record is "What Difference Does It Make," and I think it's just fucking ridiculous.
It is a good song. I definitely don't love it as much as you do, but it's
sick.
It's a great song. Why don't we play What Difference Does It Make?
All men have secrets and here is mine. So let it be known. For we have been through hell and high tide. I think I can rely on you. And yet you start to recoil. Heavy words are so lightly thrown, but still I leap in front of a flying bullet for you. So what difference does it make? So what difference does it make? It makes none, but now you have gone, and you must be looking very old.
So Mark just cut off the end of the song, which Kevin and I were both kind of geeking out on. And something we haven't brought up this show is Morrissey's gift for the plaintive caterwaul.
I wanted to talk about that. So this is the last.
Com.
This is the last. Plaintiff Catterwall is a good way to put it. Like, he is the worst falsetto singer, but he. I love
but
it.
But he sells it.
But
somehow.
He sells it. No. Don't get me wrong. I love the shit out of it. But I don't think a lot
stage
of
presence, bitches.
I think that a lot of people came back to him after this record, and they're like, Morrissey, that can't do that anymore. Like, because he doesn't.
Well, I don't think he does it much in subsequent records.
He doesn't until he goes solo. He does a couple of times.
I kind
of
feel like maybe it's a little bit like what the scuttlebutt was. This is gonna be a weird comparison, but like what the scuttlebutt was after the first Weezer record came out, and the label said to Rivers Cuomo, that whole thing that you do where you don't sing entirely on key totally works for you guys. And he was like, wait, what? Anyway,
I didn't sing on key.
Yeah, exactly. So, like, anyway, but I feel like that's an awkward deal.
That is maybe it's something that happened. Yeah, he uses that on a couple of songs on this to great effect. I mean, don't get me wrong. Like, I love it. Like, I love this band.
I'm all about it. And to me, like, this is the song on the record and followed very closely.
I love this song. I love this song. I used to live with somebody that incessantly. It's hard to make me get tired of a Smith song for a little while, but I got tired of this song for a while. As many times as this
is it like having to like pick which of your kids is your favorite?
Which of your kids is the most annoying, even though you love them all? Yeah, I guess. Yes, I you know I almost picked Meet Us Murder because I love that record. But then it just drives into a fucking brick wall the last two songs on it. Like, I can't stand the last two. Like,
the title track sucks.
Sucks. It's the worst song they ever. It's the only truly shitty song they ever put out. But
Well, I Wonder is an amazing
Well, I Wonder
song.
Is. It's almost a. I mean, it's a brilliant record, but the song before that, Barbarism Begins at Home, like their disco song, like, I could do without that. It's also like 7 minute song, and there's a breakdown where it's only like bass and drums and stuff. I'm just like, what the fuck are you, what's going on here? And there's, you know, Meet Us Murder has, you know, Vicar in a Tutu. Like, why would you, like, it's a little too silly and clever for your, it's just not an entertaining song. It's definitely a.
But I think Vicar in a Tutu is
sure
entertaining
in an entertaining way,
in
but
a Funny Bones classic kind of way.
Yeah. Frankly, Mr. Shankly is the same way. I can't really stand that song personally. I mean, I shouldn't say I can't stand it. It's fine, but it's
very Morrissey,
right? And that's him being. And both of those songs are like they're the wacky showcases, you know. But I mean, Frankly, Mr. Shankly coming off of the song "The Queen Is Dead," like,
well, the song "The Queen Is Dead" is
genius,
like, and it's mind blowing.
It's already got silliness in there, you know.
Was
like,
that the one where like it was a studio accident?
Yeah, he left it. He left the feedback. He left his guitar unfeeding, and it was feeding back. And he was just like, just keep it going. So there's that one like.
Dude, we could do a whole podcast just about the Smiths and R.E.M. for like the next year.
That's true. We could.
But we probably shouldn't.
Yeah. No, that was, it would be a lot more self-indulgent. Well, that's a little primer for anyone that didn't know, including all of you, those little things about the Smiths. Next time we do this, I'll bring the Pope in, and we will all get schooled by this motherfucker. Oh, dude, Munoz, you have no idea. Okay, so you know Morrissey's solo record? It's called Viva Hate. But originally, I think the name of the, I'm going to get schooled by this, like, I think it was Education and...
Well, it was his first solo record.
Yes. Education, I can't remember, but they decided on another title, and all the albums that were sent out were recalled, except for Australia. And Matt has a 12-inch.
Oh, so they're like super, like
super rare. Yeah. Fucking Matt Munoz has a copy of that stuff. Like, I've seen Morrissey, obviously never seen the Smiths, but I've seen Morrissey probably 7 or 8 times, which is a good amount of time to
go.
Didn't
you get pulled on stage or something once?
No. I jumped on stage once, but that's a whole different story. But Matt's seen them like 50 or 60 times. Anyway. So
no, he's dedicated.
Wait, didn't you go swimming with Nico Case?
Almost. Yeah.
Yeah, good times.
Yeah. No, I did. Yeah, we won't. I don't want to talk about the Morrissey story. Like, anyway, so that was the Smiths. Ryan, what are we listening to today?
We're going to listen to a band that was here in town for Levitation that had to scramble and ended up playing at the KUT studios. And I just happened to hear one of their songs on the way home from work, and I dig it. It's a band called Twin Peaks, and the song is Butterfly.
Our stories are real. A current affair. Our stories are original. Morning Pooch. We have no rules here. If you want to see a story that answers the question, no, he didn't do that, did he? Watch A Current Affair.
Good
Twin
song.
Peaks. Yeah.
I knew you would like it. I heard it for the first.
So you heard it and thought of me.
I did, not that night, but I had heard it. I actually almost called you and told you about this band. They were like all throughout the last month or so. Levitation was a pretty big festival, and granted, it's different than a lot of the other festivals. It's like a 3-day camping.
Dude, Austin is just like Austin Fest. All the time.
It's true. It's true. But this one's a little bit different than most of the ones that we have. But so on one of the radio stations I like to listen to, they've been playing like, oh, this band's going to be playing at Levitation. And so that's, I heard that song and I'm like, oh, Shrine's going to love. I mean, I really like it. I knew you were going to love it.
No, I had to pull over. I was grabbing some smokes or whatever, but I immediately wrote it down.
Yeah.
Oh, this is the next one.
Yeah.
And okay, so somebody mentioned that it kind of sounds like Apples in Stereo, but I think it sounds like Apples in Stereo crossed with The Nouns, which nobody out here is going to know. But you guys know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
A band that I worked with for a little bit. And if you out there, I'm sure there's still stuff. They had stuff on Bandcamp.
It was a little garagey, rockier than Apples in Stereo, but it had like. And that was the
It's like a little
stuff.
Bit more like.
But
like
the Bapa Ba stuff reminded me of.
Well, like the apples with a little bit more muscle. Like
apples with muscle.
Yeah.
But like, dude, totally just up my alley. Like, write a song for Ryan. Here you go.
Dude, I tell you, like I said, I like the song. I knew you were going to love it. Like, I don't know why. I can't remember why I didn't call you, but it's one of those things where, like, yeah, or text you. Like, a lot of times I'll hear something and I'll text you, like, you got to hear this or whatever. Like,
yeah, and the video is a study in economics and video making.
It's pretty great, though.
No, I love it.
Compendium of economics.
But you probably could shoot that on your iPhone.
It's just,
and maybe they did. Like
you
that's
could,
totally possible.
You could shoot that on like an old like flip phone from like 2005.
So tell
which I think you're still using. Right?
Tell the audience
no,
what.
Thank you.
Tell the audience if they haven't seen the video yet, if they're listening to the podcast and they haven't screeched it to a halt to pull up the video, what. They'll see when they look at it.
Well, it's just a bunch of scrawled letters of
it's
the
like
lyrics.
Somebody took tempura paint and wrote it out like on a paper bag, and then it's tacked to the wall. And like,
then each time the next stanza comes up, they just put that up there.
It's a different one.
You don't
see anybody's hand.
Colorful letters.
Yeah, but I'm saying it's like they're using tempura paint,
it's
tempura,
still
or however you say
it's,
it.
Well, and the funny thing
tempura
is
what you
like,
eat, right?
And Mark, maybe you can corroborate this, like. These guys don't have kids. Like, it looks like, had they put it all up on refrigerators, like, it looks like, it looks like, it looks like a young
kid. Finger painting.
Yeah, something your kid would have brought home and you just tack up to make them feel better.
Well, or like, whatever. But yeah, to celebrate their ability to write lyrics.
That's why you tack it up.
Also, clearly, hold them to the standards of an adult in his mid-40s. Anyway, that said, like, super fun track, and I can see why you both dig it. Like, I dug it too. I thought that was cool.
Awesome.
Yeah. That's good stuff. Are we still on for?
So I'm going to pivot a little bit.
Are you
I guess
jeté?
The reason that we did this thing.
If you're
going to
pivot,
was,
that's bullshit. Because I would have done that record this week. All right, fine. Do whatever. I don't care. It's your choice.
I want to talk about Travis the Man Who. I was going to do The Laws, and I went back and listened to it, and like half of it is skiffle.
No, it's true though. That's true.
And I still like it a lot, but I went back and listened to Travis the Man Who, and god damn, that's a great record. And I think it's underappreciated.
So. Yeah, I haven't listened to that album in a long time.
I agree with you, but I haven't heard it in a long time.
If
so
I can only pick one record that, when we're doing I Like It, it's going to be this one. And I can't go back to an 80s REM record because, like, I'll just bore everybody.
Yeah. All right.
Yeah, kind of like how I did tonight. Yeah. No, I get it.
So, yeah, Travis the Man Who, I can't find anything wrong with it, but we'll cover that next week.
All right, how are we going to do this? We're all in different places, so...
I'm Ryan.
I'm Kevin.
I'm Shane.
I'm Mark.
This is Somebody Likes It.